You're listening to Double Take, critical, sometimes confrontational, always amusing conversations about movies. Double Take is a Cinema Classics production produced by John DeSando and Johnny DiLoretto. I'm Johnny DiLoretto.
I'm John DeSando.
This is Double Take.
It is.
Interesting documentary on right now on Prime, Amazon Prime.
Right. Comes with your Prime subscription.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's a great streaming service.
Wow.
So much good stuff on there.
Yeah.
This documentary, Val.
Ah, it's wonderful.
You like it.
I loved it. You gave me the tip. Well, there are several people that gave me a tip I knew right away.
Yeah. So Val Kilmer, long storied career in sort of modern Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
Starting in the early 80s and running through just until about a few years ago when throat cancer stopped him in his tracks.
Boy. And one of the things I love about this is that he's consistently upbeat.
Yeah.
I mean, he has to put his finger in the hole to speak.
Yeah, right.
And I just think throughout there's an element of joy in his life, as crazy as it
yeah,
was.
Yeah, yeah. So the interesting thing about this movie, like when I'd heard about, you know, here's a documentary about Val Kilmer's career and blah, 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 I was shocked to find how much video footage this guy had of himself.
He's got thousands of hours.
Yeah, he has been recording video since the advent of the home video camera.
Yes, yeah.
And him and his brother, I think it was his younger or older brother.
His younger brother, Wesley or whatever.
Wesley, yeah. They made all these films together as kids. There's a tragedy that you learn about in the film. But they have been shooting this video forever. Even when he went to acting school, he's bringing this video camera. He's on the set of Top Gun. He's got this video camera. The guy has documented his life. I mean, this movie wouldn't exist without him, you know, because that's what turns it into more of a less of a career retrospective and more of a sort of exploration.
Well, and it fits what parameters you and I had set a while ago, just a week or two ago, about documentaries and the authenticity, the truth, and actually having the human being there about whom this whole documentary is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Having an entertainer, and listen, here's a guy who was the youngest to go into Juilliard in the acting school.
Wow.
You know, so, I mean, and he played Hamlet. You know, I mean, his aspirations were pretty high.
Yeah. I am surprised, though, given his attachment to the camera and his early experiences with his brother making these little films, that he never became a director. Near the end of the movie, you start to get this idea that he's working on a screenplay about Mark Twain,
and he
wants to tell this great cinematic American story, but you know, that's cut short, obviously. But I'm just surprised that he didn't go into directing.
I know, that's a great point. Here's my thought on it.
Yeah.
If you look at the segment with John Frankenheimer and how he confronts Frankenheimer about the fact that Frankenheimer said he might leave directing this, and as he probes there, I got an idea of what makes Val Kilmer difficult to work with and a perfectionist.
Okay.
I suspect he knows that as a director, he would bomb. He would be so on top of everybody to do everything perfectly. So I think it's a good question.
Well, the other thing, I want to talk specifically about that movie.
Yeah. About Dr. Moreau?
Yeah. No. Well, because it was hard for me to like buy into this whole notion of Val Kilmer as this artistic saint.
Yes, I know.
I have been reading about Val Kilmer for years, the stories about him. He oftentimes was an insufferable ass on these movies. That film in particular ruined that original director's career. Stanley, I forget what his name is now. He most recently directed Color Out of Space with Nicolas Cage, which is a pretty good movie.
Okay.
Him and Brando misbehaved so flagrantly on the set of that movie, hamstrung this young director's ability to make this expensive movie. They got him fired and subsequently destroyed this guy's career for a good 25, 30 years. For him to position himself as this perfectionist, I thought was disingenuous at best.
Okay, and I think that's fair. You can't certainly tell enough, but Frankenheimer was so disturbed, he said he would quit. If he ever had to work, he would never work with Brando or Kilmer again.
Yeah.
And here's a seasoned
director.
Well, I
mean, director. That's all, yeah, so all you got to know is John Frankenheimer couldn't put up with these guys,
I know,
right?
I know.
Because this guy was a tried and true filmmaker to the bone.
Oh,
right?
I know.
Industry solid guy, and he's like, listen, put the camera down. He's trying to get him to behave, and you know he's hiding behind this, whatever. It made it a little difficult for me to swallow that he's just such a, you know,
well,
sweetheart.
Yeah, because there certainly is no final decision about him in the community, because half of them believe he's just simply distraught, overwrought, whatever, and the others think that he may be a genius of some sort. And I think he's gifted, and I think that he realizes the limitations of even filmmaking.
Yeah. I know, I guess I walked away from it. I think what is left there is still a fascinating documentary if you can put this lens over it.
Yes, right.
And this guy was a privileged, spoiled brat. He grew up rich and he had all this access to, you know, not only, I mean, look at where they were shooting these little movies him and his brother were making. They would look like they were on the set of a Western, like a Hollywood Western.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I hate to reduce it to this, but, you know, this cancer sort of humbled him, you know?
Yeah, I think so. To me, it gave him a chance to exercise even more ability, that is to overcome it immediately and to continue on with his life, still attached to these videos.
Yeah.
That they, again, we're still seeing a very bright guy adjusting himself to a reality. And while he said he was depressed for a while, as anybody would be with that cancer, on this documentary, he does not express a bitterness about it, rather just a willingness to deal with it and do it. And I mean, I love him signing all that stuff at Comic-Con and so on. This is, you know, so much of that is boilerplate stuff. You know, you have an aging star who signs this, but he really seems to like the people. He seems to like doing that.
Do you really think? I didn't get that impression. I felt like that was a burden to him, that even when I saw him, and I've been to these things, I've seen these people.
I know. Well, you've actually probably been on stage, I think, as I remember.
Yeah,
something.
But I've been there, and I see how they, you know, you can tell when there are performers there who are thrilled to be there, right? Who offer up a smile to every fan that comes up. And I just feel like Val Kilmer, there's a part of him that thinks that's beneath him. And he even does say something about
He does philosophize
a bit. He doesn't want to be one of those guys.
Yeah,
who
he
looks
says,
back.
Look at it. And he says he doesn't want to disparage those people who go around the world doing this stuff.
But I did get the impression that it was hard for him to be warm and welcoming
And I'm with you, except
the hoi polloi.
At the moment when he signs somebody's or takes the guy's hat off his head and signs inside the head, I got a feeling that he's moved by the people individually.
Right.
The idea the idea of, you know, selling himself after his career was hard for him.
Yeah, for sure.
And you do have some really nice interaction with his family. I mean, he had a difficult time with his wife, Joanne Whaley, I think.
You don't get a whole lot of that. You don't get a lot of, you know, because he is totally in control of this this thing. You know, notice you don't get a whole lot of interviews of other people saying what they felt about Val Kilmer, right? You only get very sort of hand-picked, cherry-picked reactions to his wondrousness.
And you are so right. And we talked about this, the fact that there's no real truth. It is all what he wants it to be.
Yeah.
And this, after all, the title is Val. It is all about him.
I'll tell you the one thing this movie did was made me want to go back and read Mark Twain.
Oh, yes. And I can't believe with Hal Holbrook's success that he even tried that, and he did successfully.
Right.
Amazing to me. He's got one coming out, Mark Twain and Mary Baker Eddy.
What is that?
Huh?
What is this?
This is the film that's coming out, the most recent one that will be coming out.
Oh, it is a film. It has nothing to do with Val Kilmer.
Yeah, he's going to be in it.
Oh, he is?
And I don't know how. I don't know how they're doing that in this current situation.
Yeah, I don't know.
And is he in the new Top Gun Maverick?
He is. I believe he has a cameo role.
Okay.
In there.
Yeah.
I'm sure Maverick gets word that Iceman is in trouble, and you know, I mean, I don't know how else they do it, really.
Or they may take clips because he says there's not an airport he can go into.
Yeah,
where they won't say, "Hey, Iceman."
Right.
That's pretty cool, though.
It is cool.
You know, I mean,
that's the other thing is looking back at his career, how many, you know, the guy was on a roll there for a while.
In the 90s, he was.
Yeah, in the late 80s, blistering in the 90s. You know, Top Secret, Top Gun, Willow. I forgot that he was in Willow.
Yeah, Willow, not a great movie.
The Doors.
Jim Morrison probably cemented his career, wouldn't you think? I mean, Iceman brought him into prominence, but I thought that Jim Morrison was what everybody thinks.
Yeah, the one thing that was funny is, you know, getting back to his control, after he kind of glancingly deals with this idea about him being difficult, he inserts a short montage in there of people that he worked with saying that he wasn't difficult. You know, like
I know
Robert Downey Jr. and stuff. Of course, they're all on press tour, on a press junket saying this. You know what I mean? It's not like, hey, let's sit down and talk about it. So the guy is a control freak. You can see how maybe the people in his life needed to get some distance. You're listening to Double Take, critical, sometimes confrontational. We hope always amusing conversations about movies. We're talking about Val Kilmer, the documentary Val, currently available to stream on Prime Video. The other thing I learned watching this movie is how little I care about Val Kilmer's work.
Well, yeah.
I know that sounds a little dismissive, but I don't think any of those movies, like, I really connect with.
Well, I know, and even The Saint, because Roger Moore was a great, really one of the great TV figures for me, and he does The Saint. These are the choices he makes that I think lead him into less than Juilliard grad.
Right, and the thing, you know, The Saint was, at that time, they were, you know, based on, interestingly enough, the success of Mission Impossible, of you know, reimagining these 60s television shows as 90s blockbuster franchises. The Saint was his way of kind of trying to have a tentpole franchise. You know, he didn't want to do the Batman thing because I feel like he felt lost under that mask and the whole...
I thought that was interesting.
It was interesting.
I mean, he couldn't move in the Batman outfit.
Right. But you notice he thinks that he's the only one. Right? You know what I mean? It seemed like... you get the impression that Val Kilmer thought they made that suit restrictive for him and him alone.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, what was interesting about the Saint thing is that at the time, that tanked. That movie was a failure, and it just stopped it right in its tracks, you know?
Yeah.
And you don't get that. You don't get any of this sort of introspection on the choices alone. I don't know. Do you think that was a conscious choice to like move the film away from a sort of retrospective like that?
Well, I think your observation is one that I kind of had, which is, well, this is all very nice, but he had so many failures. It's unbelievable. And the biggest failure we have is his cancer.
Yeah.
The rest of it seems to be all pretty much a ode to joy to filmmaking. I'm interested, and we talked about the Batman Forever, and the fact I was very interested in the fact that you couldn't move in that suit, and that he had the guts to turn down the second offer, the sequel to that. This is
yeah, that's funny. And again, it seems to be based on hubris, you know, like
here
you're offered the biggest part in the world, and I feel like at that time. And I remember that. I feel like it was more of a, you know, like a petulant.
I know.
A petulant pretty boy. Like he just, he wanted more so the attention for turning it down.
Because he could.
Right.
He turned it down. Now, how about Tombstone? I love Doc Holliday as a character.
Yeah, me too.
And it looked like he had a really good rapport. With Wyatt Earp.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, him and Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people love that movie. I do not. It came out, you know, it was one of the post Unforgiven, let's cash in on the, you know, the last dying breath of the Western.
Sure, yeah.
Right? And to me, that movie always felt like it was made by people who don't know anything about Westerns.
Yeah, it was mostly the character, that is the character of the actors who were turning in, because it wasn't, you're right, it wasn't a great movie.
Well, I mean, Kurt Russell's great. I love Kurt Russell. I'm talking more about the pace of the film, the way it just feels like it was Westerns for people who don't like Westerns, that's all.
And what about, now let's go back to the one that most everybody remembers, which is Top Gun.
Yeah.
What I thought there was, here was a human being who got the chance of his life, and he took it.
Right.
And I even think he had nice things to say about Tom Cruise.
Yeah, I feel like, see, that's the other thing.
I know.
I feel like he was hedging his bets there.
I know.
You know, I did read, though, that that they did break up into those camps like that, you know?
Yes, I thought that was great.
But I also remember reading that Tom Cruise, you know, when you see a little bit of footage in the movie of Val Kilmer and Rick Rossovich and all those guys partying it up at night after, you know. And by the way, I did interview Rick Rossovich. I spent a morning with
Wonderful.
That guy one
cool.
time. And he is still every bit that kind of lunatic.
All right, you know, yeah.
Party animal kind of 80s guy. But the truth of the matter is, and again, you don't get this from Kilmer in the movie, is that Cruise was very serious about his role, and he wasn't going to be carousing and drinking until all hours of the night. He was taking his training seriously. He was taking this character seriously. So it's just interesting, you know, that you don't get that. I feel like because Maverick, he got this part in Maverick, he was showing a little bit of gratitude by recognizing that. I don't think he wanted to look a gift horse in the mouth.
No, you're right. And because so much of his fortune probably rested on the acclaim that he had from that.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim Morrison. And remember, he played Elvis Presley, too, in True Romance.
Oh, yeah. Shoot, I forgot about that. Right. Which was directed by Tony Scott. And that's another interesting omission in this thing.
Yeah.
It's Tony Scott. Playing such a key figure in this guy's career, and then he never once mentions his suicide, his death, or anything like that.
Interesting. I wondered, most people don't know that Val Kilmer is the second cousin of Joyce Kilmer, the journalist and poet. And I'm sneaking this in because you would never allow me to do this.
Yeah, go ahead.
Right? And Joyce Kilmer...
Imagine he doesn't mention it. Of course, because his ego can't handle any comparisons to someone else who's great.
So Kilmer, who died in the First World War, but was himself an acclaimed poet, he has this most famous poem, which many of us school kids remember, Trees.
Oh, yeah.
And I just open it up with, I think that I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree. A tree whose hungry mouth is pressed against the earth's sweet flowing breast. A tree that looks at God all day and lifts her leafy arms to pray. I'm not going to put you through any more of it.
Okay.
I just wanted to get to that I think there's a connection somewhere here. And it's I guess my point is that I think Val Kilmer does have artistic stuff running through his veins.
I do too. I think he's always gotten in the way of himself in some ways.
And,
with his ego and, you know... I really don't know. I'm still kind of processing this movie in relation to his career. I think I wanted a little more context historically.
Okay.
I wanted to know more about, I wanted to hear more from, you know, some of the people around him. I thought if he was genuinely creating an honest, introspective inquiry into the self and his career, that he would have allowed some voices of dissent to rise. I mean, what's going on with Joanne Whalley? Wouldn't you have liked to have heard from her?
Yeah, he does say in there that it was this film, one of the films that really knocked them out, and it might have been Top Gun.
Oh, It was, no, you're right. It was when he was overseas. I think he said he was on the set of Moreau when he got served the divorce papers.
Right, he got, yeah. So I think we get a little bit of that. I just I will come back to the fact that this is just a completely self-centered documentary. Yeah. Right? And right. And you're asking the right questions that you and I would have asked if we had been in early on the production. Don't you think we ought to hear from somebody who says yeah. that he's right. basically a
You
a
know,
bastard.
What's interesting, and maybe the film's last act of real narcissism, is that his son has participated in the making of this documentary.
Jack does some of the voiceover.
Right. So Kilmer writes a lot of the narration, and his son reads the narration.
Yes.
I don't think you ever once hear the kids say anything right. that doesn't that aren't his father's words.
I know, I right? know. And then he has what appears to be a lovely relationship with his daughter, but you never hear from
never
her.
Never hear from her either.
I know. What I love, there's one.
This guy must be a real joy to be
around. Oh, I bet he is. Controlling, do you think? But what I love is the one shot where he calls her up and says, "Are you ready?" Because they're going to go out together, father and daughter. Yeah. And then they have the shot way in the back, and you have the two the doors opening, one right next to
yeah,
each
yeah,
other.
Yeah, they live next door to each other. Yeah. It's great.
Which is perhaps a really good commentary on how nobody wants to live with this guy.
And I'm glad you brought it up, because the one thing that saves this movie is these little bursts of humor that come through. Now, it's very rarely, if ever, self-deprecating.
Right, I know.
But there is a goofiness that I was surprised to learn that Kilmer possessed since he was a kid.
Yes.
I never thought of him as having that kind of silly spirit. But anyway, you do see that. It is definitely an exercise in enduring one man's ego.
Yeah, I'll tell you, though, it's much more pleasant than going through a Michael Moore documentary. It is filled with a guy who's manic, talented, and self-destructive. And a man who, as you see him going through the latter part of his life, he's in his 60s, with having overcome throat cancer, but having lost his voice. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a guy who is a survivor. Gotta love it. It's a great kind of documentary.
Yeah, for sure. Different.
Yes.